Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert. You can find his books at Common Good Books in St. Paul, totallyiowa.com. iowawatch.org is the exceptional public service show he's associated with. And, of course, he's joining us from the Palatial Broadcasting Complex at KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo, home of UNI basketball, right?
Well, supposedly, yeah. It's been a rocky season, but, you know, that's why they have the conference tournament, so that Cinderella can come to the ball, and we'll see what happens.
That's a fairy tale, dude. So not going well in the Missouri Valley. You're still in the Missouri Valley Conference, right?
Absolutely right, yeah. With the whopping number 9 seed in the 10-team tournament that starts tomorrow. So, yeah, we're looking good.
Who's worse than you?
I think it's Valparaiso, and they... the league, so it's like beat up on the new kid. I don't know. So
well, how about we beat up on the old kid, Russia? There you go. This segue, bad one too. All right, so let's talk about two things that we found out yesterday. The first is we now know definitively the election systems of 7 states were accessed by the Russians. 2 of those states, by the way, Florida and Wisconsin, which is no small beans at this point. But we don't know how much they infiltrated these systems because, once again, the Republicans in the Congress refused to do any investigation into the extent of the Russian interference. But now we do know that 7 states, their election systems were indeed hacked by the Russians in 2016. The other thing that was really shocking was Admiral Mike Rogers, head of the NSA, spoke to Congress yesterday. I believe he was up in the Senate, and he went to talk to them, and he basically said all the intelligence agencies agree the Russians are doing the same exact thing, only worse for 2018. They are definitively trying to swing our election in certain directions, and unfortunately, we can't do anything to stop it or intervene with these attempts because the President of the United States has not given the NSA and Mike Rogers the authority to intervene to stop a foreign country from interfering into our election system. Your thoughts on those two stories?
Let's take the first one first. Even if Congress does not act, I would think the individual states would be investigating. And I know for a fact that in Iowa, there was continued monitoring from the moment that they learned that there was an attempt. Now, there was no breach, and we do not vote electronically. We have the paper scan ballots. And so they tried to breach the database and were blocked, and they had no access to actual voting. But if I'm in Wisconsin, if I'm in Florida, if I'm in any of the 50 states or any of the territories that allow voting, I, as the local official, will be looking into this. I don't need the federal government to do it. And it's not a partisan situation, because the people who run the elections in each state are elected officials themselves. And so it's in their best interest for good government and their own political future to look into it themselves. As far as the president not giving authority to NSA, et cetera, you need to do nothing more than make that known publicly before Congress. And pretty soon, I think things will happen. The thing that is vexing, perhaps the best way to phrase it, about this administration is that on the one hand, they are incredibly slow to act on certain things because of a paralysis of the chain of command. But on the other hand, the person who holds Twitter in his hand can set policy in 280 characters and will do so and change policy on a whim. And so you've got this very odd situation where if it strikes the president's fancy, then he'll make the change. Otherwise, it is truly pulling a very heavy sled up a hill, and that's not good for government.
Going back to the first one first, you're exactly right. And in Minnesota, Steve Simon, the Secretary of State, has been very active. But once again, Minnesota, paper ballots. Wisconsin doesn't. They actually do electronic tablature, and there are some people there, some questions on, you know, how reliable their system is. But once again, Scott Walker has shut down any investigations into what happened there. Georgia is another state. Now, Georgia isn't part of the 7 state list, but the Georgia, I think it's the Secretary of State down there, he has been absolutely insistent there's never going to be any investigation. He's even gone as far as trying to throw out anything prior to this current upcoming election to say that's you can't look back on it, you can't look into this, which is once again raising a lot of eyebrows. You're right, we do have fail safes in place, but in some of these states you seem to have Republicans who are insisting, I don't care how much they say the Russians try to hack us, we're still not going to look into it. And then you have a complete failure of accountability.
Oh, there's absolutely no question. And it's a matter that makes you wonder when they say, anybody says, we don't want you to look at what's going on. There may not be any hacking, but what else are they hiding?
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. It may be something where there may not be any evidence of anything that's tied to Russians. But if we think that the Russians are the only ones trying to influence our elections or get our databases or crack our systems, we're fooling ourselves. Similarly, we're doing stuff. The United States is doing stuff that we as the citizens don't know about. But once you do know about it, you fix it or you try to do something about it. And again, if I know in talking to the Iowa Commissioner of Elections, who is the Secretary of State, as is the case most places, the federal government did not notify him that there had been an attempt to breach the Iowa system until there was a news release that talked about it. Now, this is going back maybe 6 months, but I could tell when I did the interview with him, there was a tone in his voice of how in the world did our federal government not notify the state? And the excuse was, well, ongoing investigation. This is a Republican Secretary of State in a state with an awful lot of Republican office holders and Republicans running things in Washington. So it's not a partisan thing in terms of they were denying this guy information for a political ploy. It was a matter of they weren't telling anybody. Now, how in the world can you address the situation? How do you look the Commissioner of Elections in the eye and say, yeah, we knew about this, but we didn't tell you? It's just maddening. And, well, and it throws a lack of confidence, your sense of lack of confidence in the entire system.
Well, and your point, the one thing I'll point back to is, you know, McConnell and Ryan refusing to condemn the Russians during the 2016 election cycle. They refused to do it because even though all their security intelligence services were saying this was happening, they insisted that they're not going to condemn this. And then there's also been reports that Republicans in Congress did tell the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, that they could not blab. And initially, I don't know if you remember, but initially a lot of this stuff started coming to light because it was being leaked. And so they're clearly, I mean, I understand what you're saying as far as the agencies themselves. This is not a political issue, but there clearly was some, you know, political puppet making going on that was definitely trying to control the situation.
No question. The only point I'm making is you cannot say, well, it's Republicans sticking it to Democrats or vice versa. But the fact that it was done is wrong. There's political hay being made here. It's just not drawn along the normal lines. You know, in other words, that makes it even more insidious, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. See that?
Particularly as I should. It's not a typical, we're going to get your side. It's feds versus the states. It's feds versus the voting public. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that really makes you quiver a little bit, get a little nervous.
The further we go down this path, though, there's only going to eventually become two options. Either you're going to have to overthrow this government, and because that's the only way you're going to prevent from the secrets coming on out. And that will lead to a very large body count, likely, unfortunately. Or this is all eventually going to come on out. And all these people that are sitting there, I mean, it's, you know, it's like you said, you know, this is not necessarily a political thing because your Republican Secretary of State in Iowa is out there saying, hey, wait a minute here, what's going on in our state? But there are going to be a lot of people like the Georgia Secretary of State who's all of a sudden, wait a minute here, I insisted no one could look into this, but I had no idea the Russians were fixing vote totals. You know, there's going to come a point where that this is going to come on out, and there are going to be people that are going to be running in shame away from this because the truth is going to be almost undeniable. It's palatable at that point.
They're going to be driven out in shame. They're not going to run. See, that's the other thing. They won't run from it They'll have to be driven from it. And I'm not talking about forcibly or physically, but what I'm saying is the bunker mentality that exists when you say, don't look. Well, what are you afraid we're going to find? And so it then just kind of feeds upon itself. And the mood of the public, and this is not a partisan political statement. I think the mood of the public over the last, I'm going to say half dozen years, a little bit longer maybe. And I date it back to the beginning of the original Tea Party movement in 2010, not the co-opted We're a Puppet of the Right Tea Party movement, but the original one that was a bipartisan effort in that spring of 2010. Ever since, the public has looked at these things and said, we are the ones who vote. You work for us. And we need to take our power back. And the number of people who are demanding face-to-face meetings with their elected officials, I think we might be going a little far with some of that, but the concept of we need to take this thing back, we are not simply going to take your hackneyed responses that have worked for years, we're not going to take those anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a tremendous thing for society because of the fact that if you let a ruling class rule, you've lost the freedom that you supposedly had. You got to take your freedom back.
Jeff Stein joining us right now. Let's move on to Jared Kushner. But I want to ask you first off, was it Podesta that got caught trying to take something out of the official archives?
It was Sandy Berger.
For Sandy Berger. Yeah. This is a person that didn't.
Pants. Literally stuffing documents in his pants.
Here's a case where, I mean, that one incident, and that incident definitely deserved to be reviewed. I mean, even though you had top people with top secret security clearance, but they were taking documents out of rooms that they shouldn't have been doing.
Right.
Let's put this in comparison to, I mean, I think it's clear that Republicans, if someone in the Obama senior administration had access to top secret information and did not have a top secret security code clearance for maybe 15 minutes, that would have been the justification for them to insist of an immediate impeachment hearing against the president. Here in this administration, to tell you how things are so much different, you have multiple people within the White House that will never be able to get top secret security clearance, getting access to top secret security documents for a year before finally someone says, you know what, Jared Kushner particularly, he's the top of the heap on this one, but Kushner is no longer going to be allowed to look at this stuff because we cannot get him a security clearance. And now it comes to light that not only could he not get security clearance, but other foreign countries have openly been talking about trying to manipulate him, a guy that doesn't have security clearance but has been allowed to look at our top secret security memos, which is to say it's unprecedented. This alone in any other administration, Democratic or Republican, would have been the end of the administration.
There are two things to pull apart here. One is with Kushner, and I'm not going to forget that, but put it aside for a moment. All of this has exposed a real problem in the vetting process. How can it possibly take this long to approve people? And I think it was the case in the Obama administration as well. This is not anything new, but the fact that you have somebody who's supposed to be working in government and they can't get their clearances because it hasn't gone through the process.
Well, actually, I want to step in really quick here because the difference between other past administrations and this administration is when someone has not been able to get a security clearance, the first time that it happens, they basically say your security clearance is denied. The person then resigns the position and then they find someone else. Bush, Obama, this is a pretty standard procedure. In the Trump administration, very early on, they basically came back and said, we can't get these people security clearances. They fail every time. And the administration just kept putting them back in and giving them waiver after waiver. This is very different. This is not necessarily a systemic issue. It's a belligerence issue.
Sort of. And here's where I was going with it. And you're right to point out what you did. There's no incentive for the investigatory agency to complete investigations if people get temporary interim clearances. The fact that there are interim clearances because, well, we haven't done all the paperwork, so we're going to give you the clearance and hope it turns out okay. That's ridiculous. Now, if they're rejected, the person is out. What I think has happened in a lot of this, and it maybe the belligerence issue, but I think in a lot of this, it's we don't have clearance on Matt McNeil. Why don't you? Well, there are some issues we have to sort through. The red flag of issues we have to sort through has led others to say, okay, well, this isn't going well, so the person leaves. But the fact that it takes so long to even get to this point is a systemic issue because we give the interim. Why in blazes are you giving an interim? I mean, that's basically saying we don't trust you to have the clearance. So here's the stuff until we are absolutely sure you shouldn't have the clearance. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Well, and you're right. No, that you are right there. I mean, I think there's a lot of things after this administration's over that are going to get fixed. Like the idea of the Congress is supposed to rein in the executive branch, but if the Congress becomes complicit, what are the options? When you have states that are being violated on the electoral level by the Russians, the Secretary of State's supposed to look into it. What happens when the Secretary of State fails? When you have security clearances that are supposed to get passed before people get the information, when you have a system in place where it's being abused, that's going to be fixed. That still doesn't excuse the current situation we have, where Johnny Blabby over there, who's just basically looking to make money for his family's business, I really think Kushner himself getting clearance has been one of the biggest mistakes of this administration.
We need to see if the Twitter handle Johnny Blabby is available. That would be awesome. But no, and that's that. We can't wait for the next administration. You made the comment, well, there'll be a lot of things that are fixed after this. We can't wait. We can't wait for things like that to be fixed. The fact that, and I'm going to be very careful with how I say this. The fact that the president said on the issue of his son-in-law's security clearance, well, I'm going to leave that up to the chief of staff. First off, you're the chief of staff. You say, thanks a lot for that one. But the fact is, he's saying, okay, I don't want to deal with that. Somebody else is going to deal with that. Is an implicit acknowledgement of two things, one somewhat neutral, one not. The somewhat neutral interpretation is to say, okay, I'm the president, but he's my son-in-law and I have a conflict of interest, and so I'm going to stand back and trust my chief of staff. That's what a normal person would do. My sense, however, is that the stepping back was because he knew or had some good reason to believe there was some shady stuff. And he wants to distance himself from the decision in case what comes out points out in very declarative, provable ways what you just mentioned, which is, how does the Kushner family fortune grow?
Absolutely. By the way, Johnny Blabby is available, but also is Jared Blabby is also available right now on Twitter. I just checked it.
Did you actually look?
Yeah, Jared Blabby is available on Twitter. We might have to set up an account. Jeff Stein joining us right now. Let's take a break. We'll come on back. We'll talk about some more Democratic wins, as well as also the politics of the NRA and how things are turning for that organization. Jeff Stein joins us on a Wednesday, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
The Seward Co-op Creamery Cafe is ready for the cold, serving seasonal dishes using locally sourced ingredients, Minnesota craft beers, and organic wines. Their delicious vegetarian, vegan, and omnivorous menu options are sure to satisfy. New items include the cauliflower po' boy, harvest chili, braised beef tostada, and the pork banh mi, as well as rotating seasonal vegetables and pasta. Sustaining a healthy community, you will find Seward Co-op Creamery Cafe at 2601 East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis and online at coopcreamery.coop.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Your home stinks. What, you didn't notice? Odds are you're immune to the smells in your home, but the stink is definitely there. That means it's time to bring out the pros from Zero Res to clean out the dust mites, dander, and bacteria festering in your carpet. This month, you can get three-room Zero Res clean starting at only $119. Plus, this month, you can still get a great deal when you get your air duct Zero Res clean. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMN.com. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
Moe's Tax Service on Ford Parkway in St. Paul has been preparing tax returns since 1971. They're one of the most successful independently owned tax services in the country with a diverse team of highly trained and screened tax preparation experts. Tax laws and forms are always changing, and you need someone who is a dedicated tax preparation professional. Visit www.moestax.com. That's M-O-H-S-Tax.com. Or give them a call, 612-721-2026. Moe's Tax Service. They work for you, not the IRS.
Kevin Ross here, inviting you to our brand new store called Ambibulous. What does Ambibulous mean? It means one who enjoys alcoholic beverages of all sorts. Ambibulous is a Minnesota maker's market. Unlike traditional liquor stores, we feature only craft beer, wine, and spirits made here in Minnesota. We are ready to guide your selections, where you can build your own four or six packs. Find us at 949 Hennepin Avenue East in Northeast Minneapolis or online at ambibulousmn.com.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Reminder, your chance at winning VIP tickets to the Blue State Ball March 10th at the Blaisdell. What you have to do is go to am950radio.com, register for the newsletter on the website. That's am950radio.com. In the newsletter, which should be out tomorrow, there's going to be a secret word. When you find the secret word, email that to the station, comment at am950radio.com, comment at am950radio.com. You'll be entered in to possibly win VIP passes to the Blue State Ball. Once again, go to am950radio.com. to sign up for the newsletter and for more details. Jeff Stein is joining us right now. Jeff, they're in New Hampshire and in Connecticut, two more seats went for the Democrats. In one, the Connecticut seat, 44 years since the Democrats held that seat, and they won that, although that was much more of a toss-up. The New Hampshire seat was far more interesting. That was another one of those 22-point swings, 23-point swings. I will say this, Democrats have a tendency on the seats they lose not bringing those up. But for the most part, once again, another series of seats where the Democrats have gone into districts which overwhelmingly, at least in the case of New Hampshire, went for Trump and are now once again in the hands of the Democrats. Still, the writing on the wall does not look good for the Republicans coming up here this November.
I am a big fan of all politics is local. You know that, and the listeners know it. And it is rare when you have what I call local elections. And even House of Representatives seats, those are local elections. It's rare to have the big groundswell of change. 1974, the Watergate year, obviously, is one of those. You might be lining up, and I'm not equating the actions of this administration with Watergate per se, but what I'm saying is from an electoral standpoint, rarely do you get the big momentum shift. This could be one of those, because typically the party, and there was some great research that I just saw on this, typically the party in the White House loses seats in a mid-year election. That's just the way it is, especially in the Senate. Obama took a real hit and yet remained personally very popular and was elected and reelected. But this is lining up to be one of those that, given the organization in place, I am really struck by the progressive movement's ability to use social media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or email chains, to immediately mobilize. And I think that's the kind of thing that's necessary, that kind of a ground game. And I can only speak for what's happening in my neck of the woods, but the Indivisible group has really targeted those on the right, current office holders, to hold them accountable on a regular basis and to show up in elections. They'll have to have good candidates, and that's always a challenge. But the opportunity is there. Your point is very well taken. The opportunity is there. And again, what it shows is there's no such thing anymore. This is the most important point. There's no such thing as a throwaway race. Mm-hmm. It used to be we could say, well, okay, a token candidate here, or maybe we won't even put any money behind this race because, heavens, there's no way they're going to win that. Uh-huh. And all you have to do is go back, and we've talked about this before. Nobody wanted to run for president on the Democrat side in 1992 because George Bush was such a popular post-Gulf War president. And there were a lot of people running, but it was not, if you will, the presumed top tier of candidates. Well, all of a sudden, the economy made 41 vulnerable and led to 8 years of Bill Clinton in the White House. Mm-hmm. And so to sit back and say, well, you know, this person's unbeatable. No one is unbeatable. And it doesn't have to do with last minute scandals. It just has to do with how the public reacts to things.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be 30-32. Those were massive years for the Democrats, and because of Hoover and the Great Depression. But, you know, I do think that, you know, I think this is going to look a lot like the Watergate elections, where you're going to see the Dems pick up a lot. The I will say, too, that the Democrats themselves seem to be trying to find ways to not run candidates. I mean, we have a few races here in Minnesota where you're right. This is the year. If you're going to run anyone, run anyone. Get someone out there. Get someone decent. Don't just let some guy roam in and say, I guess I'll be your candidate. No, you got to get decent people out there because the Republicans cannot afford to spend in every race. And right now it's looking like even in races like Tom Emmer, Minnesota 6th District, which is a, you know, is a carved for Republicans to win. There's going to be a race there. You've got to get a candidate in there. And I think the ground, the roots of the party, these grassroots organizations, they're really kind of starting to push the DFL in Minnesota and Democrats nationally to say, no, don't overlook any race.
Oh, you absolutely cannot. And it may not look like a winner at this very moment, but you don't know. And so, and I strongly urge not only that the local folks find good candidates, but they insist on those candidates and not have them cherry picked from some regional or national group, because I think the track record of the national folks sort of pre-selecting their favorite candidates in a race, that does not tend to work either in the primary or in the general. I mean, if you're politically active, and obviously if you're listening to this program, you care about it. If you're politically active, there's no shame in running an honorable race and losing. And what if the stars are in alignment and you win? Mm-hmm. You can actually affect change as opposed to just sitting on the sidelines. And so, I mean, there's no greater honor to me than public service. And so why not take advantage of what could be tremendous opportunities to really affect great change?
You want an interesting one. Up here we have Klobuchar, of course, is up for election, upcoming election. The only person they can find to run against her is a guy named Jim Neuberger, who's best known for making racist comments about African-Americans on the House floor in Minnesota. This is a guy that cannot win outside of his own district up in Becker. And he's the only one they can find. No one else wants a piece of Klobuchar because they already know. That's the kind of stuff that tells me things. That the Republicans have already conceded that race. They're not even going to try if that's the best they can get. That's a big red flag for the Democrats. Get a candidate in every damn race.
And I'll, to take your point, if I'm the Republicans, I don't want him carrying my flag into battle. I mean, they need to, instead of just saying, well, we're just going to not do anything with this race, they have got to at least have a candidate that they can be proud of because of the drag on the entire ticket. And I'm not talking about straight ticket voting in this kind of malarkey. What I'm talking about is the fact that if you've got a U.S. Senate race and the best the party can do is someone who's known for racist statements, that is going to reflect on your entire party up and down the line. You need to find somebody who says, I believe in ideas. I understand it's an uphill battle, but if I'm going to go down, I'm going to devote six months of my life to campaigning on what I believe in. And even though I may not win the office, you just never know. But as a whole, we have to speak to what the party is about and what we stand for. And it's a conversation worth having, as opposed to every Republican up and down the ticket having to apologize for the chucklehead who doesn't have the sense he was born with.
And the thing is, it just they try to create a, okay, I'll give him a few weeks and things will calm down and then something else comes up. It's never ending. It's going to be interesting because this president, outside of like four races, is not going to have to go on the campaign trail because no one will want him out there come November.
Yeah, it's a real interesting situation when you see him in a rally with his supporters. I mean, people on both sides just have to acknowledge he has that group. You don't have to agree with a word he says. You don't even have to, you know, maybe the sight of him speaking turns your stomach. But the fact of the matter is you have to grudgingly concede he has figured out a way to reach a certain audience. Now, If you are an incumbent Republican who needs your base to get fired up, first of all, you're in serious trouble to begin with. But let's just go with that. You might use him because you've got to get your base fired up. But that's at the risk of alienating the independents that you really need in order to gain reelection.
It never gets old. Jeff Stein, once again, find his books. The Floppy Show is his latest book. You'll find that at Common Good Books and at totallyiowa.com. Jeff Stein, kind enough to join us on a Wednesday. Jeff, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you. And, of course, we are going to be back on your Thursday. Mike McEntee is up next. Till tomorrow. See ya.